Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Custerbis Podcast with a K. Joining me this week is James McLean. Hello, James.
Hello.
And later on, I'll be speaking to Gareth Cavanagh, editor of the Warp Warp Doctor Who magazine fanzine, if you can get your head around that concept. It's a fanzine about a fanzine. However, we're going to talk about comic strips this week. Particularly interesting is news that writer and Doctor Who fan Paul Scoones is releasing the comic strip companion, a mammoth 608-page paperback and hardback available from Telos, which tells the story of Doctor Who comic strips in things like TV Action and Countdown, Dalek comic strips as well, from 1964 to 1979. I don't know about you, but I always think of the Doctor Who comic strip as starting in Doctor Who Weekly back in 1979. What about you, James?
I suppose it is for us, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Because that would be our sort of age bracket, won't it?
Exactly, yeah. But of course, Doctor Who appeared in comic strip form many years before that, all the way back to 1964. Have you got any particular love for comics? Or Doctor Who comics?
For comics, I probably still do have a bit of a guilty pleasure for it. Uh-huh. I used to read 2000 AD since I was like 5 or 6, and then I stopped when I was at university just because it was getting expensive. And after that, a few awkward submissions as well as an artist, which didn't go down brilliantly. So put me off the whole thing. But yeah, I still do. I'll get them from the library. There's not that much in the Doctor Who ranges in the library, sadly. I'd love to actually read some of the earlier stuff, you know, the sort of TV 21, the stuff prior to our sort of Doctor Who monthly era, where comics were slightly different, slightly more compact, and a little more pulpy, perhaps, which are always quite enjoyable to read on a rainy day.
There's a kind of alternative term for comics, isn't there, which is sequential art.
Mm-hmm.
And it always strikes me that that's a term that's come around sort of 40 years too late. It seems to me that modern day comics are closer to movies than anything else in the way that the artist and writer have this kind of combination of viewpoints and the scripts and the direction and everything. Whereas, say, maybe these TV actions, TV comics, whatever, of the old Doctor Who's, there are pieces of sequential art because often they don't make sense, even with the dialogue.
Well, there's a period where I think the movie comparison is perfect for comics, especially now, obviously not just talk about Doctor Who, but in general, they're now far more dominated visually like movies are. And so they are paced as much by the art as they are by the story.
Yeah.
While if you go back 30 years, comics didn't really pace by the art. Comics paced by the narrative and the constraints of the episode, because a lot of stuff was far more episodic than it.
Did a lot more self-contained as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, and I like them for that, because in the end, I think I might have said this before, but you read a comic these days, you can be through it within 20, you know, within 3-4 minutes, because a lot of it is splashes, it's big art shots. The art controls the story. So, you know, if you're a reasonable reader of above the age of 4, you'll get through pretty quickly. But if you get, say, like one of the old, let's take an example, like TV 21, I mean, okay, the sort of Dalek stories are a lot shorter, but everything was so much more compact. You're actually reading more than you were sort of having to be impressed by the artwork.
Yeah.
But strangely enough, the artwork was actually often technically a lot better than what you get these days, in some respects. But now I know what you mean. I think they were then far more like a sequential narrative.
Mm.
Now they're sort of like a sequential, as you say, movie.
Like very elaborate storyboards almost.
Yes, the storyboards are very elaborate. And I don't think that's necessary. I think, as I say, it actually spoils the pleasure for me, because there'll only be so much you'll look at a piece of art, but there'll be far more you'll indulge in a story. And I find when I go to the library to get old comic stuff out, because I don't buy comics anymore, I'll get them from the library to read, I'll go for stuff which has got is more condensed, like the old-fashioned stuff. It's got to have good, crisp art, And comic art is horrendously, it's probably one of the hardest art forms there is, because there's so many parameters to it. It's not just like, it's not like fine art, you know. I mean, okay, Turner was a fantastic artist and more ways than I want to sort of talk about, but I mean, it's a compact breed of design and creative and flair mixed in with creative ability to mix these all together. So it's a very difficult stylistic form. But I somehow think it works better. It has better balance back in those sort of 64 to 79 era, where it wasn't so dominating as it sort of became sort of late 80s. Yeah, and I blame Simon Bisley actually a lot for that. People know him from a lot of the 2000 AD stuff and Batman stuff. But there you go.
Okay. Well, recently, I mean, I dip in and out of comics. I mean, I picked up one of the recent League of Extraordinary Gentlemen a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm.
Kevin O'Neill.
Yeah. It was the 1910, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I always saw that in the library, actually. I was tempted to go and grab that.
Yeah, it's okay. It's slimmer. It feels like it's a component of a larger story, and it's about a third of the size of the last two. So
yeah,
I will find out as I progress through it. But I should also say I wanted to start the new Transformers series as well from IDW, which is sort of classic based and sort of continues on from the old type Transformers from the 80s and 90s. But the foibles of my local branch of Forbidden Planet prevented me from grabbing the first issue, so I didn't see the point. But what I have got is the Star Trek and Doctor Who crossover.
Oh, huh.
Assimilation Squared is what I presume it's called. It's an assimilation with a little to the power of two symbol next to it. And I've got the first two issues of this. It's written by Scott and David Tipton with Tony Lee, and the art's by J.K. Woodward. It's the painted sort of artwork that you get. It's very elaborate artwork. And it obviously has this big thing that it needs to get out of the way before progressing. If you're new to this idea, listener, the Star Trek Doctor Who crossover basically mashes the Doctor aiming Rory with the next generation team of Picard, Riker, Data, Geordi the Forge. No sign of Will Wheaton though, young Wes Crusher, against Cybermen and the Borg. Again, a joined force. There's obviously a big narrative bit of madness in there. In terms of the Doctor Who universe, which after two issues, and again, the foibles of my local branch, I know that there is the third issue is available at the moment, but I don't have it. I don't know if anything's going to be developed from this, but it's kind of a difficult thing to set up, really. You know, you've got two completely different universes that you're bringing together. Mm-hmm. And having read the first two issues, they've done it really well, making use of I'm not going to give anything away here, making use of established narrative devices in both shows, and finishing the second part with a beautiful money shot, as I believe they're called, of I think more of a splash really, of the Cybermen in the Borg, which basically is what you're paying the money for, to see this big collision, and some nice old style Cyberman battleships as well. And then there's the cover of issue 3, which, or possibly an alternative cover of issue 3, which kind of plays up to the fantasy of the fourth Doctor meeting Kirk and Spock with some Cybermen. It's all very interesting stuff, and it's paced well across the two issues. I think it's a 10-issue series. As I say, the setup is working well, and I'm excited by it, but I'm a little bit frustrated by the lack of lack of availability. I mean, I'm going to have to go online and purchase it. Then again, I could be using Comixology for it, couldn't I? I could be just like streaming it, downloading it directly to my tablet.
Yes, I've been tempted to do something like that, because it would be nice. I mean, I wouldn't mind looking at these. I was just looking at the artwork as you're talking, because you can actually obviously find images of it online. And again, it's very nice artwork, but again, it's very indicative of where comics are now, is that the art does dominate the storyline quite a lot. I mean, I was just looking at one splash, two splashes in particular, and they're very interesting. There's one very nice one of Data Riker and Gates McFadden, Beverly Crusher, in the holodeck, and
right,
the shot below of the police box in the holodeck as well. And it's a very beautiful shot, but that's like three panels, and about 20 words have taken up an entire page. Where, you know, go back to 1970s, you'd have pretty much a customary six panels at least in every page.
Yeah.
And so you'd feel there was more there. And I have to point out on that shot, she's got the windows very, very wrong.
Yes, I noticed that as well.
He's got them split into nine segments when it should be split into three.
Three, yeah.
Which is incredible because he does such a good shot at all. He does a good, mock up of all the faces, but gets the police box wrong. Many Doctor Who fans would be cross about that. And yes, there was another splash shot. It wasn't a splash shot at all. It was just a standard page layout, which is very common. And it's four panels again. It looks very beautiful, very well rendered. It's the very final page, again, you were talking about, where you get the money shot, as you put it, of the Cybermen and the Borg. Mm-hmm. But again, look, it's four panels, which is great for that initial shot. When you think how much, you know, comics cost, and you think, oh, that's it.
Yeah,
it can be a bit frustrating.
Yeah.
But I actually like that picture. If you see the picture in the on that last page, the 11th Dr. Smith is in the corner of the bridge with all the crew, and he looks a bit worried. There's Wally. He doesn't look like he should be quite there, as if he's been stuck on. Bless him.
Yes. it's interesting stuff. But you know what you say about the eye is interesting because. I do wonder if this has been done, whether this kind of industry habit has kind of evolved over a need to increase the value of the products. Whereas if you go back, say, 20, 22 years or so, you go back to like the Marvel UK days, and you've got people like Brian Hitch, who we know is a designer on Doctor Who these days, Jeff Senior, Lee Sullivan, they're all working on magazines like the Transformers, or they were doing the Doctor Who comic strip, Death's Head. The old Action Force series as well, Thundercats, and certainly a lot of those. I haven't reread Action Force or whatever the other thing I mentioned was Thundercats recently, but certainly the Death's Head and the old Transformers. They're eminently rereadable, and they have striking artwork that doesn't appear, and you'll be able to put me right here, but doesn't appear to be something that would possibly take a day to do a panel or whatever.
Mm. Well, I mean, you've got the tough deadlines, haven't you, as well? Because these were sort of like weekly. Transformers was weekly, wasn't it?
It was indeed, yeah.
And so they may only be sort of 6-7 pages per story, but you've got a fast turnaround. To be honest, Jeff Senior is another one of those dastardly artists who perhaps did push on the vital importance of the artwork, because his artwork to me in Transformers was extremely striking.
Yeah.
More so than when he did things like Doctor Who. Because I think we've said this before, but there was one Transformers story called Target 2006.
Yeah.
Oh, 2006.
Oh,
we
future.
Must be scared of when that happens and the Transformers come and attack us. But there was one battle between one of the Ultra Magnus and Galvatron. And the shots were so vibrant and so powerful of Galvatron riding, pulling, smashing the windows as he's, you know, pulling this truck that's trying to escape him. As they're fighting it out, does carry a lot of power.
Yeah.
So in a way, I can sort of see why comics have gone down that route, because when used right, artwork can be very powerful. But I do think these days it has an overriding power. And if you go back, as you say, and I think one of the wonderful things about this book is maybe it will actually encourage people to sort of check out some of the older stories. Is that some of the artwork is absolutely beautiful, but it's had to be micromanaged. To a point where it doesn't dominate because there isn't the space to dominate.
Yeah.
And you can enjoy a very different way of reading comics. And it's not just obviously Doctor Who. You can go back further. You look at Dan Dare. You can go to your local library. You'll often find compendiums and Dan Dare there. And the artwork there is astounding. It's absolutely beautiful. And a lot of it is heavily compact.
Yeah.
You know, stuff that you get a whole lot of issue is down into two pages. So, yes, I think it's a great book. I'm very much looking forward to reading it. Also on the DVDs, isn't it? I think a few, I can't remember which DVDs they are, the Doctor Who ones, that catalogues the changes in the Doctor Who comics over the eras.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you off
the
no, nor could
back
I.
Of my hand, which well, I'd need it on the back of my hand to remember, but off the top of my head, which one's the eye? It's sort of yeah. Several, isn't it? So,
but they're very good as well. And point being is, it's a fascinating evolution, which I think would be more enjoyable to read than to actually, no offense to the DVDs, than watch on a DVD.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's move on to this week's special guest. Joining me now is Gareth Cavanagh, friend of the Casterbris podcast and site, and master of all things comic strip related in terms of Doctor Who. Gareth, how are you?
I'm very well, mate. And you?
Not bad, thank you. Thank you for asking as well. now, we were talking earlier on about the new Doctor Who and Star Trek crossover strip, Assimilation yeah. Square. Have you read any of it?
Well, I've read one issue. I've bought the second issue because, of course, the distribution can be quite random over here, the IDW stuff. Sometimes you see a load of it in one hit, sometimes it goes months and months without any. Okay. So I've bought one issue, which I think was issue two.
Right. What do you think of it?
Well, I can see why it would be popular, and I can see why on paper it looks like a brilliant idea. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But it could also be brilliant, like the Alan Moore story about the League of Extraordinary Animals. It sounds brilliant, but it's terrible. I'll tell you that another time. That's not for the air. But it's the problem is that you're dealing with quite an anemic strain of Doctor Who robots, you know, Doctor Who Cybermen, and you're putting them up against a very beigey, bland, extremely reasonable brand of Star Trek in the Next Generation. So it's the bland against the bland. So it didn't have any teeth for me, I'll be honest. I like the idea, but not for me.
Okay. I mean, as I said earlier on, there's this whole issue of bringing the two universes together, and I think the first two issues deal with that quite well.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Actually, I'm being a bit unfair there in a way, because the meeting with Picard and the Doctor on the holodeck and the conversations, they're very nice, you know. I mean, they were nicely handled and they did feel credible. So, I was being a bit hard there. So, I'll give you that. That was nice.
Obviously, we don't know where it's going to go from now, other than some sort of conflict and some shooting and stuff. So, it'll be interesting to see where it does go. What do you think of it compared to the rest of the IDW range?
I've only dipped in and out of IDW, to be honest, because, as I say, it is quite patchy, and I think it does its job very well, but it's not necessarily being written for me, is probably how I'd say.
Okay.
They are quite sort of lightweight, and they are quite variable. Some I have enjoyed, some I haven't enjoyed, some I've read and gone, that was perfectly nice, and never thought about it again. So,
yeah.
It's a difficult one, really. You know, I think that the job they're doing is for a different market. I don't think they're for us. They're for a different sensibility. That said, you know, Star Trek and Doctor Who should be fantastic. You know, if we were talking, you know, Kirk, Spock and Bones landing on Telos and exploring the cyber tombs, you know, and getting sucked in to, you know, the tombs and the adventure, having, I don't know, chased Harry Fencourt Mudd through hyperspace and ended up on Telos, and that would be great. I'd be dead excited, actually. You know, Troughton, Kirk, Spock, uh-huh. Cybermen, great. Yeah, you've got me there. And there's that lovely teaser cover, which has got, I think, Tom Baker and the Revenge Cybermen, and they think, oh, that's the one. You know, that's the one for me. Which goes to show that the idea, for me, the idea is brilliant. They've just picked, and I've got no problem with how it's written. I think the art's very nice. I think they've just picked a pretty bland premise, bland era, slightly obvious in a way. So difficult.
Okay. Obviously, that's running in its own little kind of Doctor Who sub-universe. And over in the UK, we've got Doctor Who magazine and the ever-marching comic strip and the length Doctor adventures, which seem to be going in a slightly more interesting direction than some of his predecessors went.
Yeah, without doubt. I think we're back in a very good, comfortable era with it. the strip goes through funny little phases of renewal and change, as you'd expect with any ridiculously long-running series like that. And it is an amazing long-running series. The Eighth Doctor stuff is the highlight, and I think we're getting back to that sort of feel, you know, where there's a new confidence in the storytelling, and they're telling their own stories and using the same characters, but doing interesting things with them. And yeah, I think it's not been as readable as this for years and years. And, you know, fantastic. Great to see Scott Gray back. And, you know, I had a couple of pints with Martin Geraghty the other day, and he's doing a whole 12 months of strips. He's doing the entire strip for the 50th anniversary year. So he's very busy. So I asked him all these questions, as you do being a fan. You know, I said, "Oh, is this coming back? Is that coming back?" And he said, "Honestly, I don't know either." He said, "He said I haven't been told." So, and I sort of believe Mark when he says that, because he's a straight deck. So who knows what's coming back? And we had our own little sort of pet theories about what may or may come back. So we'll see.
What, other than the Eighth Doctor era, when would you consider the Doctor Who magazine strip to be at its apex?
Oh, with the Eighth Doctor stuff? Ooh. Well, it's difficult, that, because it's pretty much got three... It's like a three-act story almost, because you've got the very early stuff, which I'd probably say is amongst the best, because the strip is new and fresh, and you know, it kicks off with Izzy and the Toymaker strip, and it really kicks up into something quite adult and satisfying. And then you've got the whole Threshold plot, which goes on and on and is quite interesting, and brings in all sorts of different characters and twists, and Shade comes back, so
Doctors.
And the Stockbridge. So that's a really satisfying piece of storytelling. And you know, let's be honest, at the time Doctor Who was very unlikely to come back.
Yeah.
You know, it was not going to come back. So I remember having this realization myself in about 2002 that it just wasn't coming back. So I was just
a bit late, mate.
It as it was. Yeah. That was it. I was going to love it as it was, and I was going to see where it went. And it's clear that the people doing the strip felt the same, and it was great. Then you've got the final third, where it feels like it's reining in a little bit. I wouldn't say it's becoming corporate, but they know that there's something new coming down the track. So there's almost, not a rush, but it feels like it comes to a natural end, that they're pulling together as many of the threads. And, you know, you still get things like Children of the Revolution with the humanized Daleks, which is beautiful.
Yeah,
I'd love to see that done for the TV. That would be amazing. And there's The Flood, which I would love to see done for the TV, which you could now, which again is amazing. Both of those two get to the heart of what the Daleks and the Cybermen are really about.
Yeah, future Cybermen is a brilliant idea.
Oh, not just that. The idea of using the emotion is this disease that, you know, they're going to free us from. And, oh, you know, brilliant. Yeah. I mean, great work. And then the strip after that obviously loses its mojo a bit. It loses its confidence, because suddenly it's suddenly merchandise again, and it's supplementary to the show. And I think it's taken a few years to come out again as its own thing and its own storytelling, you know, not because it was rubbish necessarily, I think it's just now finding its storytelling confidence again, and it's willing to go places that perhaps it wouldn't have done, and having the confidence to tell longer stories. You know, the reliance on little two and three parters, it constrained what you could build up. Now we're back in the realm of longer, linked up, more satisfying things. So
yeah,
big tick from GK.
Okay, good to know. Now, we're, you obviously have a finger in the pie of the Great Warp magazine, a big love letter to Doctor Who magazine.
Yeah, and the Northern Office, yeah.
The Northern Office, yeah. But you're not the only person who's waxing lyrical about Doctor Who and comic strips, are you? Paul Scoones has got a book coming out.
Yeah, Paul Scoones, great bloke. You know, we often email and chat, and he's doing his thing and we're doing our thing, and I think between us we're helping to shine light on some of the great stories that were told and the stories behind them. And Paul's got his fantastic comic, the first volume of the comic guide coming out, which I'm looking forward to reading.
Yeah, an unofficial and unauthorized guide to Doctor Who in comics, 1964 to 1979. I didn't even realize there was as many as that, to be honest. It's on the front cover of the book. It looks amazing.
Oh, my word. There is a lot of stuff. You know, there is a lot of stuff. I mean, it was, well, let's see, it was 2 pages a week in TV comic for, you know, for a good however many, 12 years or so. Mm-hmm. And you had Countdown, and then you had the my favourite, the TV21 Dalek spin-off, where they've got their own little world and their own little things. That's just, that's great. And then there's the annuals, and there's TV comic specials. There's an awful lot of stuff. Much of it variable in quality, it has to be said. I wouldn't necessarily say I would cross the road to read a lot of it, although the Countdown stuff is good and the TV21 stuff is exemplary. But I think there's always an interesting story to tell behind them. Roger Noel Cook, who wrote most of them, has had the most fascinating career, and he'll be in there for long interviews. Roger Noel Cook, for those who don't know, started off writing Doctor Who, the Doctor Who comics in the 60s as a very young man. Then he moved on and made his fortune in porn mags and video porn. And then he moved on and made his second fortune in internet gambling. And now he's very happy and retired and relaxed. So he's probably gone on to have the greatest career of any Doctor Who writer ever. It's quite bizarre, really.
That is
unusual. So there's some great tales to tell, and I know that Paul will approach it in a totally rigorous way, so it'll be packed with knowledge.
It's 608 pages, so which accounts for the page. Price. So that's going to accounts for the page, counts for the price. So that's going to be quite a read. That's one for the Christmas week, I think.
Yeah, that's a weighty one. That's for a cold week in the house. I'd say just read it. And you know, we love facts as Doctor Who fans. I've got to say the most exciting page-turning read I had last year was Molesworth's Wiped, where he took the whole dry subject of quad tapes and 16mm telerecordings and turned them into something that's, you know, more thrilling than a paro. It was amazing. I've never been more excited about wiping dates and intercept dates and lost vaults in Sierra Leone. It's like, whew, what a life.
Okay.
Amazing.
So, let's move on to Warp Warp issue 3.
Sure.
I believe there is an issue 3.
Yeah, there is. We did a lot of work probably about 6-8 months ago on it, and then it's had a little bit of a hiatus because we've both been working on other projects. So
this is your
think of it as like, yeah, me and Colin Brockett. Think of it as like Spielberg and Lucas trying to make that mythical 5th Indiana Jones film, and always other projects seem to get in the way. But we're on it. And in fact, I have done some work in the last few days, and some nice stuff came through. I had the free gift is hopefully going to be a flexi disc this time. So these, because Doctor Who magazine famously had a flexi disc as a free gift in about 1989. Right. So we're doing one, and I had some fantastic remixed. We've got like some DJ tracks on. And these were a load of remixed, crazy Troughton incidental music tracks.
Okay.
And they're amazing. There's some really groovy stuff from the Invasion. There's some stuff from the Mind Robber. There's a really good track from the Wheel in Space. So these crazy cats have gone back and looked at some of the wackiest stuff to start with and really added an edge. So that was fun. And I was doing some work on our Alan Moore interview, which was good.
Yes.
And rereading that was fun. And I reminded myself a few things in there I'd forgotten, which was Alan Moore went to the same secondary school as Matt Smith.
He did what?
Yeah, he went to the same secondary school as Matt Smith.
Ah, right, okay.
Like 30 years, you know, aside, because we were having a chat, I think, about, well, you know, were you the most famous bloke in school? And he goes, not anymore. Not anymore. So it was, it was fun to remind yourself of. So that's, we've got a lot of work to do in that and some exciting new strips. You know, all sorts of really good stuff. So hopefully, you know, the Northern Office will be grinding back into the life of this in the next couple of months, and my Southern colleagues will be joining me.
And when are you planning to have that ready for public consumption?
Oh, it's a bit of a movable feast at the moment. I'd rather like to have it wrapped up in time for... Well, it's a bit of a problem, this, and I'll say this being honestly. It'd be nice to have it wrapped up for Christmas, but it'll probably drag on into January. And then if it drags on to January, it's like, oh, is this, is it a 50th anniversary thing? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not. It's 4th issue 3. But then I suppose we'd be daft not to look at a celebratory aspect of it. So, yeah, I can see already stuff is going to bump to 4th. So, ever get a feeling that you've started something that you can't finish?
Yes.
And I think the 4th is possibly this. It's going to stretch on forever and ever and ever, which is wonderful. And obviously, Paul Scoones will keep coming with more volumes. And, you know, by the end, I think between us, we'll have told the story of Doctor Who magazine and the strips and some of the amazing tales behind that, I will tell you some of the gossipy things offline, but some of the things we've discovered, they're eye-rollingly good.
Okay. Well, we all look forward to a third issue of War of Warp. Gareth Kavanagh, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Cheers, mate.
Now, that was an interesting chat, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think comics are a fascinating thing. I've just been reading one, Gotham Central. Have you ever read that?
No, I haven't. No.
It's a Batman one. You often again find it in the libraries, and it's quite a clever idea. It takes the police force in Gotham City, and you follow them in a very sort of quite gritty reel. Right. And again, big fancy panels are kicked back to only major points in the story, and you get quite a lot of detail in there. And they're very beautiful, and it's just occasionally the Batman will appear in it. But you're just dealing with the police officers having to deal with this mad city. Right. And it's a really lovely idea. It's a lovely texture to it. So modern comics, there is a lot to go for. I mean, I think the stuff in that Doctor Who stuff is very pretty. But it's just, when you've got something like the Doctor and Star Trek, you think there's so much you could get on with. There's so much you could get under the skin of that. I find those sort of comics frustrate me when they are just so beautifully panelled. So you think, yeah, fuck that. I want to have dialogue. I want to see what they talk about. I want to see how they deal with each other. I don't want to see a large, big splash page of the bridge. Yeah, I know what that looks like.
Mm.
And I think they frustrate me more when it is big crossovers like this and they are more pretty than in-depth. But yeah, it looks good. Mm. The Kirk one looks good, doesn't it?
It does look good. If only I don't think it's real in the slightest. I think it's just an alternative cover at the best. Unless there's some sort of flashback, because there is a... again, I'm going to give something away here, so I won't say it, but perhaps there's a flashback within the narrative to something that's happened in the past. Perhaps there isn't.
Oh, sounds interesting.
So, that's it for this week's Casterbus podcast with a K. It's goodbye from me and James. Bye-bye now.